Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Leona Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. I would like for everyone to join us as we hear once again from our guest, Andy Williams Jr., speaking on issues pertaining to our broken political system that stands in the way of solutions. Politicians who stopped serving the people years ago. Andy is a rabbi, modern-day abolitionist, and advocate for the people. Born in Illinois, dropped out of high school, eventually took up residence at Illinois DOC, and ultimately was determined to improve himself. He attended college, obtained his degree, and has been helping people across the nation with legal issues, housing, criminal, traffic citations, judicial, prosecutorial misconduct, IRS issues, and much more. On July 3rd of 2023, Andy announced his campaign to run for the presidency of the United States of America, and he is running on the people, We the People Party. Andy is not taking sides with either party, but he is running on behalf of the people with a message of unity, representing rights of the people, and restoring America. His platform is to abolish all forms of slavery in the form of unfair taxation, mass incarceration, and to prevent government from infringing upon rights of we the people. All are welcome to join in, call in, give us some feedback, your opinion, or just listen in as we now interview our guest, Andy Williams Jr. Are you on with us, Mr. Williams?
I am on. How are you?
I want to thank you so much for coming on, and I want to say you are an inspiration to many people because we live in a country where the average citizen are afraid to make a move. They're afraid to show or demonstrate their own intelligence and their own motivation to fight for something so unjust in an unjust and dysfunctional country. So I thank you for coming on, and I want everyone to hear what you have to say, because for where you came from and where you are heading is a beautiful thing. And I just admire you for your motivation and your willingness to stand up for the people of the United States of America. So can you please introduce yourself again to the audience and fill them in on anything I may have forgotten?
I'm Andy, the hood candidate, Williams Jr. The rabbi is from the teacher side of me. I'm an Israelite, so my culture is a Hebrew. When I read the scriptures, I take it as a personal story about the ancestors, and that's how I've become, you know, the Israelite, one of the people, the descendants of those in the scriptures. And so the rabbi for Andy is to be a teacher. And coming to where we're at today in society about politics, we have too many people telling us and not teaching us. And the role of government has been always to protect the rights of the people. And instead, it's been infringing upon the rights of the people. And we the people have, in my opinion, we the people haven't had our own party. That's what we haven't had. And so we are the people is our party, and it's just ordinary people that want to do something, don't know how, and the means of running for office and becoming a member of our party. We're going to teach you. We're going to teach you about legislation, just stuff that we don't know. You know, they don't have civics in class in school no more. So you got to have a place that comes to it to learn. And our party isn't about a position of power. It's about a position of freedom, which is our inalienable right, something that we've been given to by birth. And I got to all of this about just really saying there's nobody I can see that can represent, you know, me personally. And that's how I got into the party situation, which we're really more of a family. That's how we plan to grow the movement, is to be a family. Well, we are the people. That's a little bit more about me for this week.
There are going to be people, I'm sure, throughout your campaign that are going to be asking questions. As many of the legislative members, politicians who are running for the presidency, they speak in a language that the average citizen does not understand. And that's sad because not everyone has the mentality or the intelligence to be able to understand what's being said. So they basically get their opinions or they form their decisions based on what people are telling them without the understanding of exactly what was going to be, you know, benefiting them. So when people ask questions like issues of what's going on right now as a whole with the United States, with the economy, what's going on in the United States with the problems people are having with homelessness and the immigrant issues, how it's going to be resolved. There's a lot of questions that people are going to be asking, and I'd like to know what your thoughts are on different areas of need in this country, different areas of functioning.
It really depends on what area. I think we, the people, have the solutions to, I would like to say, a lot of the problems that we're facing. For instance, Michigan may be doing something that's a solution that Utah should know about. In Maine, they're very progressive right now when it comes to how they're dealing with the people that are incarcerated. So that could be a model for other states. And we're talking about, you know, the modern-day slavery in the form of prison. There's other states that don't have sales tax or certain taxes, like Florida has a better tax thing. Well, why can't, you know, 35 of the other states take that model? And I think what we the people have to be able to do is say we're fed up and we see the models of these other states that's doing it. So if we started following what's working in one state, then we could become the United States and we could really live up to that, the declaration of our life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And I think when other candidates, and not to speak to them personally, but what I'm seeing in the media and reading through articles and even on their own website about their platform, they're more interested in their position of power, their agenda. So we, the ordinary people, are being overlooked. And it's so many of us that have the solution because our families are intact, for those whose family are intact. And those whose family, you know, could use some assistance, it's possibly because of the unfair taxation that's going on. Because you're taxed in your check, you're taxed at the grocery store, you're taxed when you buy an automobile. You're taxed when you buy some clothes. Like it's just all this taxing that goes on. And if we the people set back up our own way of living and bartered with each other, then we would get rid of that tax burden. B, it wouldn't take so much of us to live. Like for instance, if we had we are the people grocery store. If you went to a grocery store, you were a member, then we know that those prices will be a lot more accessible because we're connected with the people in Florida with their oranges, or we're connected with Puerto Rico and their avocados or whatever. And that's how I see we the people can form the government that we want, as opposed to the one that is in place right now that's ignoring the voices of the people. Like we're the voice in the wilderness crying out and nobody's really hearing us. And the evidence of that is the state we are in right now as a country.
I am a person that believes in freedom in other countries without having to worry about being denied entrance into another country. I am not against the immigrants coming over here, as the United States was built on immigrants. One of the things I find that the problem seems to be is that the immigrants are in the streets. We have an issue of homelessness in the United States of America. Even in Washington, D.C., there's a serious problem with the homeless. What would your thoughts be on finding ways to house these people, not just the homeless, but also the immigrants that are in the country? What are your thoughts on how we can arrange for these people to have housing without having to clutter the streets with homelessness? I will say one thing. I also mentioned in a previous interview with someone that in this country we have in the cities, even in the suburbs, there are dilapidated buildings. There are houses and buildings that are not even being utilized. And my thing is they have vocational schools. They have students that are going to vocational schools for electricians, for carpentry, for various areas of building development. What are your thoughts on using these people, including the formerly incarcerated individuals when they come out, to use these type of tools, give these people the tools to work with, and even the immigrants, the male immigrants, I know a lot of them know how to build, even in their own countries. So what are your thoughts on using these buildings, these unused buildings in dilapidated places that to maybe house a lot of these people that are coming over or that are already here in the streets? What are your thoughts on some of these issues?
So the Habitat for Humanity, the model that they have about sweat equity and building, you know, homes for the people that's going to move in. So I say let's do that right now for the housing situation for those that are here that are houseless. So listen, we're in each one of communities. ACLU begins to, not the ACLU, Habitat for Humanity gets to expand across the states, you know, so each state. You look at where there's an area of darkness, you know, houselessness, the dilapidated buildings, and then you go in and you rehab them or build new homes with, you know, the model. Department of Corrections in Michigan, the prison build program, which I talked to the executive director, what is his name? I got to look back in my role there, but I talked to him, and what they did with this prison build program, which they called the people incarcerated villagers, is they taught them how to build prefab walls, cabinets, bunk beds, and then they partnered with Habitat for Humanity. Like what they would do is they would build the prefab walls also. So then the military would come get these prefab homes, I mean walls and stuff and structure by partnering with the ACLU, and then they would go to the land and put these houses together. So then that became affordable housing. Then you got Homeboy Industries with Father Greg Boyle in California that's building solar panels. And then there's another energy company. I'd have to look them up. I have that information. They build a beautiful model for solar panel where it saves the city so much money by, like, say, putting this solar panels on the top of Walmart or a library or a police station, you know, for the big metropolitan areas. And now that whole community gets to run off that energy, that grid. And then the third thing, when we're talking about the immigrants, we have these shipping containers that you can put into homes. So you take a shipping container, or two or three, and then you bring them into homes, apartment complexes. And I don't mean put all the immigrants in one apartment complex, because the immigrants are people. What I'm saying is we bring them through, make sure, you know, there's no sicknesses and stuff that could, you know, spread. It's like a health checkup. Okay, we check you out. We see everything is straight. No different than what we would do when we do checkups at the doctors here when you move into certain grades of school. And then we integrate as we the people. So it's really not immigrants. It's some people that are coming from afar. And for those that believe in the scriptures say, remember, you were once foreigners in a land that was not your own. And to be honest with you, every last one of the people on earth were foreigners because we came from a place that wasn't here first. So I'm just saying, like, we that's why when we go back to where we are at, where we are the people party, we recognize that we're all people. And if you can label somebody an immigrant, that could be offensive to somebody that's been labeled an immigrant. But if I welcome you as a brother and a sister, and I want to make sure you're healthy as well as people that are the neighbor that you're moving into, you don't bring something to them. So it's like a mutual thing. Now we're all on the same, you know, playing field. If you don't have some certain information, it's not my job to oppress you, but it's my job to teach you, kind of like the Good Samaritan. You know, somebody, a robber was beat up. I mean, somebody robbed somebody and beat him up on the trail. and the Good Samaritan, who wasn't even part of the same faith, is the one that helped him and paid, you know, for the room and board. That's the model that we could take on and say, this is how we help other people. Whether you've been enslaved in the prison industrial complex, because I don't believe everybody that's in prison needs to be in prison, specifically when there's no victim behind it. Now, if you're a harm to yourself or society, I think that there's a way that you should be locked up. And I really don't even want to say locked up, but more about rehabilitated or reformed. And then that, we take that process and say, okay, maybe we can review them, you know, 5 to 7 years or whatever it is. But this whole vengeance, punitive mindset, we got to do away with that. I believe that's where my generation comes in, for those that have not already been, what I would say, indoctrinated. And I'm not saying that in a negative saying. I'm just saying we're taught stuff from other generations or people around us, and then we adopt it as our own without even questioning it. And so I don't think we the people have the solution. And what we have to be is talk about the solution and how we can implement it. So now with the solar panels and that, now you got green collar jobs. Now we're going back to farming with the agriculture. And now, you know, it's so much that we can build from that. And when you ask me, where do I get the concept from the green collar jobs? It's from the book Van Jones wrote. He wrote it. It's a book, Green Collar Jobs. We want to talk about Homeboy Industries with Father Greg Boyle. It's a book. He wrote it. This is his experience. When we talk about the education system, there's a guy, Tom Burrell. He wrote the book, Brainwashed. There's another lady, Dr. Joy DeGroy, that talked about the post-traumatic slave syndrome, that generational trauma. That's for all the people. It's not just for a certain culture, ethnic group. We've all suffered some sort of generational trauma, and I think we've magnified it when it comes to marginalized people. That's what it is, because it's more about a classism to me than it is racism. And there's a class of people that are impoverished that the system is making a profit off of that group of people.
I interviewed a couple from the Netherlands earlier today, and they wrote a book because Dave Van Veen had been incarcerated in the past and talked about, you know, a lot of the things that he went through as a young man that went to prison. But one of the things is we did talk about a lot of these issues that you're bringing up now too. Myself, I don't know if I said this before, but I've been in 11 countries. And none of the countries I've ever been in have been like the United States. In the United States, they feel like they have to have beautiful homes. They have to have luxurious cars and all of these things. When I was in other countries, families and the immediate families and also extended families, they lived together, you know, and they lived together in small houses and they were able to save up. And that's what happens even when people come to this country from China or, you know, any Asian country or a lot of India, places like that, they live together with their extended family members. They start businesses, and there's so many things that they do. But when you talk about farming, when you talk about a lot of these things, people in this country, it's beyond their even thinking. I grew up, my father had a farm. We raised chickens and ducks and pigs, and we and our neighbors had goats, and we had strawberry patches. But they don't do these kind of things in this country. And I never really was in the city, so I have a problem when I go into the city. I have anxiety, and so there's a lot of advocates in the cities, and I'm sorry to say it, but people have their cliques in this country. Everybody's in some kind of clique, and if you don't fit into that clique, then you're like an outsider. And that's the way it is in America with a lot of issues. People, they spend all their time trying to impress their peers as though their peers have something much more than them. And I spoke the other day about leadership and followers. We have a lot of followers in this country that actually think that they're leaders, when in fact they're not. They're followers because they're not speaking up on their own about these issues. And we have... And I'd like to have your thoughts on this. Our current president and our former president, and the corruption and the efforts that they make to keep themselves or their own loved ones out of prison when, in fact, everyone else has to pay the consequences. It doesn't go on for years and years. It goes on for a week, 7 business days max for many people that have crossed the line, that have committed an offense. And in this country, it's about wealth versus poverty. It's slowly deteriorating as far as the middle class. And I'd like to know what your thoughts on this and how would you handle something like this? Can you hear me? We have a sound problem then. 904, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. I certainly hear you loud and clear. It's called me up drop.
Would you like to state your name?
I'm Tahaka. I'm on L Bay. I was on your broadcast yesterday. You extended an invitation, and I'm here today.
Yes, and I'd like to hear what you have to say. And also, I don't know, Andy, if you're able to hear me, or if you're not able to hear me, can you come back in again?
You call me, I'm dropped.
I see him on, but I think there's probably a hearing sound problem. I've had this before. I don't know why it keeps doing that. But Tahaka?
Yes.
Please tell us what you'd like to share with us as well.
Well, I would like to, ask the president, and I hope he don't get mad if I treat him as if he's already the president, because I would have loved to have to sit down with the president and ask some questions. But he was talking about the neighborhoods and the communities and stuff where we reside. And as far as I'm concerned, that's the most important factor that we should be concerned about. He's talking about the lots and the vacant houses and stuff like that. And what we've done here is we was fortunate enough to be given a couple of lots that once held houses, but the houses had been removed and stuff. And we turned those into agricultural centers. And we got kids from the colleges and stuff, and we were planting trees, we were planting gardens and stuff, and we wanted the community's participation, but it was very, very difficult for us to get that. However, we built the gardens anyway. And I personally feel like if I'm going to be effective in my neighborhood, what I want to do is I would take one square block. I walk up and down the road. I see what exists. I see what houses are vacant and what lots are vacant. And I would begin to see if I could plant something there. And maybe the next lot we could go ahead and construct a dwelling. And he mentioned the containers. We have them down here in Florida. And they'll take these containers and stack them atop one another, and they'll renovate them and open them up as apartments. I think it's a brilliant idea. And they're certainly hurricane proof.
So you have seen a lot of vacant buildings that are being unutilized that can be renovated and used.
Yes, we already done that here. But I'm more concerned about the lots lots that have houses occupying them that are condemned. If it is condemned, then I think the city should go ahead and remove that and strip it down to the bare land, so that we can get on there and create a community garden and get the participation of the people, the immediate people in that area, to help us with the watering and the fertilizer and all that stuff, because they're the ones that's going to benefit from cropping the collard greens and getting the chard and chard and the oranges and apples and tangerines and pineapples and wild grapes and all of this stuff over there and take it to their house and feed it to their children and their grandchildren. And it's more nutritious because you're the one responsible for its growth. We use no chemicals, none of that. We're just doing the natural sciences. And then the areas where we might be able to put in a city square block, we may be able to put three housing units that contain people to move in. And then we got if we got a square block, and we got one garden in the front, one on the left, one on the right, and one in the back. And we got houses in between that we have built to provide homes and shelters for the people, as well as sustenance so they can have something to eat. That's the way I see it. I wanted to run that by him, and we provide our own security, our own fertilizer, and so on and so forth.
Okay, and Andy, what are your thoughts on that? He's addressing this to you, and he said he hopes you don't get upset that he's already looking at you as the president.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, we can hear you. Yes. So, sound like you might be on the speakerphone. If you not on the speakerphone, we can hear you better. Are you on the speakerphone?
No, I got my headphones in. Maybe let me try to cut the volume down a little bit.
Okay.
I was wondering if you ever thought about maybe having a virtual meeting and inviting people around the country to participate in the meeting to talk about some of the issues that they'd like to see you as president address around the country. And Takara, can you please let Andy and the audience know a little bit about yourself as well?
Okay, I'm a Moorish national. My name is Tahaka Amana LB. I'm located in Jacksonville, Florida. I'm a Minister of Education for the Moorish American government in charge of the entire eastern seaboard of the United States. I teach law, contract law, and we are deeply involved in agriculture right here where we sit in the state of Florida.
Thank you. Thank you so much. We had Reginald Clemens on yesterday. I believe you were on the show with us then, right?
That's right.
Okay, that's it. Okay, so Andy Williams, Jr., please respond to that and let Takara know your thoughts on what he just brought up.
So first, I just want to thank the brother because that, you know, the Moorish Science Temple that he's talking about, that has paved the way for a lot of stuff that I comprehend right now. We don't talk about everything because not everybody is conscious to this level. So I thank that part. And the agriculture, it's so important that we till our own land. And we have become, I don't want to say we've become, I think mentally, we've never truly as people left the plantation. So now the majority of us people are on the plantation, meaning, you know, the America, the North Americas. And so part of what we talk about is restoring America, and that's to turn back to Turtle Island. And that's where we had an aboriginal way of living. And that's how we deal with this conquered state of America when we're dealing with criminal injustice, because it's a crime to lock somebody up for not committing an infraction against somebody. And the brother would know, since he teaches contract law, that's what the whole America system is about, contracts that they've entered into with the people that the people don't know. So I could do a whole open discussion with that, where I could be a student as well as a teacher, because I'm always able to learn. And to the point about doing a virtual discussion, once we're able to get the political, which again it's a faith-based organization, so it's more of a family, but once we get that site up, we will be able to do virtual town halls throughout the cities that turn into in-person town halls. But that doesn't include just me, it includes the people that are already there, because one of the things I feel we have been taught is that one man can save the people. That's not true. We the people have the power to do for self. And I take that from the Honorable Marcus Garvey when he said, man, know thyself. If we could just know who we are, the power that we have within, we going to see the solution already exist. And so for some of the people, they're saying, well, this is what should be done, because they're the teachers not even knowing it. Some people are there just complaining. Great. Well, they're letting us know that the problem still exists. And there's other people that says, I've heard enough and I want to do. And that's the position where I feel like I'm part of that generation that says, we have heard of the problem, we've seen the solution, because when I discuss stuff, I think of models that already exist. There's nothing new that I'm creating. The only thing new is I'm newly saying I'm going to continue in this position to serve the people by stepping in the role of chief. And the chief is not the same concept with the Aboriginal as it is with the colonial system of saying it's a president, because it's a president of a corporation. And so we're dealing with business. And I feel like I have to be able to know how to be, as we would say, Leonie, in the world, not of the world. So it's times where we're going to have to make business decisions, but that doesn't infringe upon the rights of the people. So that's my 2 cents with that.
And you mentioned Aboriginal, and you mentioned Turtle Island. And I'm glad you brought that up, because the Native Indians, they felt the same way that the people feel today about immigrants. They felt they were living here first, and all these people from England and elsewhere came over and pretty much invaded them. And now we have people in this country looking at the immigrants as though they should not be here. They should not belong. This is our territory. They shouldn't have. And they're doing the exact same thing, but the only thing is the Native Indians, they had their land taken forcefully. And what's happening right now with the immigrants, I don't feel anyone has the right to prevent them from coming here. I think that they should be helping them to find housing, as well as the people we already have in this country that are homeless, that are on the streets. And I look at all the bad weather that we've had, and all the heat and all the tornadoes and earthquakes and hurricanes. And I'm saying, what is happening with these people in the streets? How many of them are dying because of this? And these are issues that I'm also looking at, is how are we going to address this? How would you address it as the president? How would you address these issues?
So I don't believe we have to be the president to address the issues.
Thank you.
What we need to do is be able to show the solution to the problem, and then we the people just do it. And so that does take, you know, resources. And I feel like so often we think we have to be elected in a position to do that. And as you've heard me before, the church should be the leading one in this social movement, because that's just what it should be, period.
Exactly.
That's what it should be. And we have a lot of the elected people that go to church, and one of my elders, he said, you read the Bible but walk away from the message. So just because you attend to a church, or just because you have a title of a label, don't mean you're bearing fruit. It does not mean you're bearing fruit. And again, that comes from a lot of us that are spiritually blind. And when we see the individual that's, you know, in need, we as a people, regardless of what your spiritual background, should be want to fulfill that need. Because I believe Tupac said it better, that, you know, you in there eating good and we out of here banging on the door trying to get in to get something to eat because we hungry, eventually we just going to kick the door down. And I'm trying to say we can avoid kicking the door down if we just stop being so wasteful, and then we start sharing. And one of the things, I believe the reason why we don't share, because we don't have a relationship with people. We don't even know who our neighbor is. You know, you hear the neighbor downstairs going through something, and you like, oh, I wish they would stop yelling. Well, why don't we find out what's going on? And I don't mean go in there and intrude while, you know, some major argument or something is happening. But afterwards, like, hey, sister, is you okay? Hey, brother, what's going on? And then build the relationship. And whatever that need is, it could be because of finances. It could be for several different reasons. But we can never presume we know without taking the time to know. People don't care about how much you know until they know about how much you care. And if we see there's a problem going on in our community, you know, and we could fix it. And one of the things I share is, like, we're always talking about Black Wall Street. Well, why don't we just resurrect it? We don't have to keep talking about the past without doing it today. We can do it because we the people have the power. And if we the people on one block said we're going to buy up that lot on that block, and then if we the people decided we're going to come together and build a house off of Habitat for Humanity's model, if we the people say we're going to put this teacher in there because now this is a new home for the teacher, and then the house that the teacher comes out, then we're going to come together as a community to pay for it to put that houseless family in. And when that houseless family gets in, they say, well, we can bring one immigrant in. But the immigrant can only come in after that immigrant then went through the process to make sure everything is straight and cool. You know what I'm saying? It's not like you just blindly open the door to anybody, whether it's the neighbor that you don't know or the immigrant or the foreigner that just came in, which that's what I think we should start calling them as foreigners. We still have to use a level of wisdom, but we can do this. And I don't believe that I have to be elected to get there. I need to build this platform up the way we're doing it now and then organize it through the states the way we are, and then we're going to start providing solutions right now. Because if you become a part of our family and say, when I get elected, this is what I'm going to do, this the wrong family. We ain't waiting to no vote. This not what we trying to do.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned it. It's almost like, let's do it. Let's do it like a family. When I was young growing up, my father, if we wanted seconds at dinner or lunch or whatever, if we wanted seconds or thirds, my father used to always say, you better eat all of it, because there are so many people out there that are starving, that don't have the food. And so I grew up with that mentality that, you like you say, you want to look out for others. You don't want to just assume, and you don't want to say, it's like you mentioned, okay, the Bible, Christ said, you know, if you see somebody in need and you wish them well, but you don't help them, you don't feed them or whatever, then there's no sense in wishing them well. Or don't do as they do, you know, do as they say, but don't do as they do, because they say one thing and they do another. We have a government like that. In this country, we have a government that's so busy talking about what people should do, and they don't follow their own words. If they did, then they would be judging their own loved ones or themselves when they do wrong. They would expect to go through what anybody, any normal person would be going through. But we live in a country, and there's so much waste in this country.
Huh.
And it's sad. You know, I used to send things over to Ghana, West Africa, because I was there. But the thing is, it got too expensive sending it over. But if the government, when they have these planes going over to these other countries, and they must have some room where you can send things for free to these starving countries, and I see these little children with their stomachs swollen from starvation and flies all up in their face, and here I'm saying, what is our government doing, sending all this money and all this stuff over to Ukraine when we have, even in our own country, starvation? We have all these floodings, all the destruction. And other countries are going through so much. Why is it so important for one particular country to be getting all this? And I just got an email the other day, another $500 million going up. These are the kind of things that really upset me. I look for our government, for the United States of America, that's going to focus on their own country first.
Mm-hmm. Right, because if you don't take care of your own household, how you going to take care of somebody else's?
Exactly.
And if you take care of your own, meaning, you know, here we're taking care of the people in America, then the people in America is saying, well, we can go help take care of the people over here. We could go help take if they receive it. Because sometimes I think there's a history that's going on that we don't know, that a lot of stuff didn't kick off because those that came before started it. They started it, and they keep it going. And then the next generation just keeps it going because we fail to say, well, why? Why are we in y'all business? Why are we fighting? Why are we doing any of the things we're doing? Why? And that's because I believe it's those that went before us started wars. And we, the descendants of those wars, are keeping them going. And I believe we need at least 8 years, and it's going to be more than 8 years. It's going to be the rest of our existence. We're going to live in a state of peace. And it started probably back in 1996 when I caught the blueprint and started turning from my own wicked ways. That's what got me to be where I'm at today. It was a gradual process. And now that I understand and comprehend those steps that I took, I'm bringing that back to the people. And I'm saying, when we look at this, you know, 2024 applications to become the president, we need to find somebody where experience, that has experience, and experience matters. And that's what I know that I'm bringing to the table. I know. I sued Donald Trump back in 2020 and the governor of Pritzker, Illinois. And it had to do with the COVID situation. And what I said in the suit is, you know, Donald Trump, if you're the president, you've breached your fiduciary duty. Because I have the right as an indigenous to self-medicate the way we do, healing, changing our diet, whatever it is. And I'm not saying whatever was going on, I couldn't catch it or whatever. Because, again, I'm not saying one way or another. What I am saying is you don't have the right to force your policies onto me because I have a right as a descendant of the indigenous, the aboriginal people, and we use medicate through this way. Through the scriptures, it'll tell you, you know, we shouldn't take something that's foreign and put it into our body because we don't know what that is. That's the type of experience I'm saying. If I'm calling out this current man who's, you know, the president, who's only pointing the finger at the Democratic governor over here instead of using the authority that he has as the chief magistrate and use the DOJ to say you're infringing you're infringing upon the people's rights by forcing them to do something, then I don't believe you're adequately qualified to hold that position. And so I called him out on it.
And that's why we need that's why we need a new president with your thoughts and your ideas, ideology, because what we have right now are two parties that are like children fighting back and forth, and they're not really focused on anything to help this country. They're either focused on helping other countries or they're focused on bringing one another down like children in school. And this is why we need leadership where people are neutral, people are trying to come together to solve the issues. And as you say, we are the people. We are the people. We are the government. But many people don't realize.
Can I ask the president a question?
Yes, please.
Mr. President, it has been my experience, and this is the way I see it. I don't deal with beliefs. I only deal with what I know for a fact and I can prove. But back in the day, when we was growing up, we was running up and down the streets and dirt roads. We didn't have no electricity. There were no underground wires. There was no telegram posts, wires on top. So we was not suspended in midair in animation like we are today with concrete, sidewalks, and asphalt. However, if you became active in your office as President of the United States, would you encourage the people to, right where they are right now, to grow their own food, be they in an apartment or in a home with on a lot? Are you willing to do that?
100% I am. That goes back to the agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
And not only would I say grow your own food, but we would utilize the hemp from the hemp stalks, from the cannabis plants, and we would start manufacturing, turning into rope, steel, fuel, paper, clothing, because that's agriculture. In Kentucky, they've taken the hemp stalks and opened up sawmills, and now they're making, you know, floors, household stuff. They're taking the hemp stuff, making it into hempcrete. So then we would use that as part of our green-collar jobs again and deal with the natural way so we're not tearing down forest trees and all that. And I'm just saying that to say once we're able to do this and live this way, which I don't have to be elected to do it. People just have to be taught that we have the power to do it. But the election, especially, which I'll get to that in a second, especially because we're trying to push at least 300 people from across the states to run or apply for the position of office, because in the 2024 election, it's 468 seats that's up in Congress. If 300 of us, like-minded individuals, apply for this position, then we would be two-thirds of Congress come January 2025, and then we can do what's right. And when I talk about this social entrepreneurship, you know, through farming and the agriculture, I'm saying we as the representatives of these states in our district, we would remove the red tape, because government has no business being in the people's business if the people are not infringing upon other people's rights. So for the government to start charging all these fees and all the stuff that they're doing, that's some people that made that decision. And I'm saying that decision is wrong because under the Fifth Amendment, you have a right to occupation. You can't license a right and charge a fee for it. And that's what we're going to do away with. And we don't have to be elected to do that. We can do it now. There's this, let me pull it up because I got the magazine right here. There's a Justice Institute or somebody that has filed suits about this already. You know what? I don't want to try to move and be the move. But it's, they've already done that, and they prevailed on it. And those are the models that I'm saying we're going to duplicate that. And we're not waiting for the election to do that. We have a people party that have organizations standing to file these claims against these states that have already, you know, done what they, you know, they've already filed these claims and prevailed. So we're going to take that model and push it across the states. The voting rights, infringing upon people's rights, that's been settled. So why are we still dealing with it? Because men and women get up here and think they're going to infringe upon somebody's rights. And the judges, some of the, well, judicial officers, because coming from you, brother, you know, they're just administrative hearing officers. They're violating their rights. They're not even doing what they're supposed to do. So we have to also be able to put in place the tribunals, ecclesiastical courts. These are things that have to be done because we don't have another choice, because this current form of government needs to be altered, abolished, and we need to form a new government that is ran by we the people, which what the government was intended to be when it was created before even America was here. Every society has had some form of checks and balances. We know from the tribes they had the elders in the villages. That was a form of government, but it was built through a spiritual aspect, not some conquer, oppression, force aspect. And I believe the reason why America is living that way, because the spirit that they've done by conquering those that have come before us is in generation to generation, so you're just being taught without knowing why. Why do you have somebody forcing you to do something? If you don't do it, you get busted upside your head. That's not discipline. That's authoritative rule. And if we look at America's history, you said you escaped Great Britain from that. So how did you come over here and do it today? Because there's no checks and balances. That's how. There's no accountability. You think you got immunity, which you don't, but that's because they're all members of the same bar, and there's no separation of powers the way it's supposed to be, and the only way that's going to happen is if we stand up and do it. But I'm not naive to think that it's just going to happen overnight, so we give out the freedom of choices to say you got these tribunals, you got these ecclesiastical courts, you can hold courts your own self, because that's what the sovereign people do. Chisholm versus Georgia, a court opinion that says the people are sovereign. Now, if you go up in the courtroom telling somebody, I got the right to travel, and they telling you, well, no, you was driving. No, you're trying to force your words on me. That's not what I was doing. I was traveling, and I'm not engaged in business. And that can only happen when brothers like you and other people across the state begin to teach this current generation, the generation coming up. And I believe in 3 to 5 years, we're going to have a nation of people that respects everybody's indifferences as long as we're not infringing upon anybody else's rights. And one of those methods, as Elhaj Malik Shabazz would say, never confuse the method with the objective. And the objective for Andy is freedom and liberation for the people.
Okay, well, Mr. President, I would like to ask you another question. Are you familiar with a brother by the name of Moses West that created a machine to turn air into water?
I believe I heard of, maybe not. Maybe not. No, I think I'm talking about some water into some fuel. But no, I have not. But I have now.
Okay, well, he read it on YouTube. You can check him out. However, Mr. President, I would like to commend you. It's been a pleasure listening to you. And now, if it's all right with the sister, I would like you to come over there and be on my broadcast. Because I don't like you. But anyway,
do you have a podcast? No?
Yeah. I have Morris Talk Live 100 at Blog Talk Radio. I'll be on.
Can you repeat that for the audience? And that would be good to have Mr. Williams on there. That would be awesome as well, because I'll tell you one thing. Somebody had told me about him and told me he was running for the presidency, and they said he's really good, he's intelligent, and so I reached out, and I'm honored that he accepted, and I'm honored that he's coming on every Tuesday for the month, because I'd like to see some changes, and I know that the people of this country are tired of the same old in politics. I'm sure there's a lot of people that want to see a change in politics, a change in the White House, and this is an opportunity for people to finally start considering a positive change. This would be a major change. It would be somebody that has been there, done it, is aware of the needs of the people, and so we need to promote. We need to try to push this out there and get people to start having them on the show and starting to you know, promote him, because this is what we need. I am so tired of the same old politics that's been going on for the past several years. We need a change. We really do.
Okay, well, my number is there on your switchboard. You can give him my number. He can give me a call right after the broadcast over if you want to.
I will.
And we can set it up. You mentioned earlier in the broadcast about the church. Now, I would like to give you my rendition or my version of if I had a church. If I had a church, we could worship on Sunday. But Monday, when you come in, you have to go upstairs because up there we're going to be talking about real estate investment.
Mm-hmm.
And Tuesday, when you come on, we're going downstairs, so we're going to be talking about how to handle yourself in the New York Stock Exchange and investment there. On Wednesday, when we come in, we're going to be talking about international investment and currency and international travel. Then we'll go on Thursday, we'll deal with reading, writing, and arithmetic and supreme mathematics. On Friday, then we will start dealing with relationship between you and your family and your community and agriculture. This is how my church would run. Instead of me having a church that deal with the Bible study, church on Sunday, Bible study on Monday, Bible study again on Tuesday, Bible study, the pastor's appreciation on Wednesday and all this right here, that ain't doing nothing. That's how my church would run. What do you think about that, Mr. President?
Listen, I'm 100% in agreement with it, and we're in the process of trying to buy a building that used to be a former church, and we're not, well, I worship on Saturday as our Sabbath, which Sunday, you know, people can do that too. I'm not, you know, saying it's got to be no type of way, but what I am saying is we need to be open Monday through Sunday is what I'm saying.
Exactly.
That's all I'm saying. You don't have no building that's closed Monday through Friday and then talking about they won't teach no critical race theory in these public schools, because that ain't a public conversation. The movement has always happened through the church. And when we get to the position, and again, I respect you because I already hear it through your spirit, we is in a generation of a Marcus Garvey. And for those that rock with John F. Kennedy, JFK, he specifically said, it's not what your country can do for you, it's what you can do for your country. What that means is stop asking people to do for you for what you ought to do for yourself. Let's stop talking about Black Wall Street when we have the ability to resurrect Black Wall Street. Michael Bloomberg, when he ran in 2020, he had the most beautiful platform because he came from a position of being a social entrepreneur. Well, Bloomberg, we need a little bit of that investment that you put into your campaign, and we needed to make it to the hood. That's all we asking. And we ain't asking for you to fund the project. We asking for a seed. Because anybody that has a mind of freedom know what the seed can do, can produce your own harvest once you plant the seed. That's where I'm at the position at. I don't got to look back 150 years for reparation. I can focus on COINTELPRO and the war on drugs and see right now people need restitution to be made whole from what you did in the last 40 years. Are the people still living? Matula Shakur should have never been in that position he was in. Why do we got to go back that far when we see we're having fair housing violations right now? I don't want to call myself a victim of it, but I'm in a position right now battling with a fair housing issue currently right now. what I gained the first experience of fighting a foreclosure for 13 years. There's no way I would have been in the Obama administration and bailed out the banks. And you can hear that speech when I was on WTTW. This is the stuff that, again, that Andy comes in with experience matters. We're not talking about problems. We're providing solutions. But if you're going to be open Monday, if you're going to be closed Monday through Friday and you're doing all this tax break, I think you're in the wrong business, and I think we need to cut your tax breaks off because you're not doing what you called to do. And that's from the scriptures, let alone from what this is. No. And I think we can
teach. Well, listen, brother, can I tell you exactly what happened one time?
For sure. And you do know we're going to get on the phone after this. We're going to talk personally off the air.
Okay. All right, well, I'll tell you what, and I'll tell you when you come back, because this is heavy. But go ahead on and take care of your business, man. I'm here. I'm listening. Go ahead.
Okay. Get me riled up with this stuff. This game brings me great joy.
That's
how people resolve issues that have been long overlooked throughout the years, is to promote discussion. And this is good that we're talking. This is good that you're talking about these things. I have a friend to talk about green. I have a friend. He's Sustine. He's originally from Benin. He lives in the United States, and he's been working on green, you know, more healthy ways of living. And this is what you're talking about as well, both of you. So these are issues that really need to be addressed. A lot of these issues about, you know, the air, the quality. Look at the global warming. The government can't repair what they did. The damage is done. So we need to look at, as you mentioned, other ways to survive. And farming and things like that are exactly what's needed now.
Mm-hmm.
I
think you're absolutely correct, sister. If you come to my house, you'll be able to see pineapples growing there. I got papaya, let's see, thumb quartz, tangerines, oranges, grapefruits. Let's see what. Oh,
wow.
Peaches. Let's see, what else we got in it?
In the United
mangoes.
States?
I always
thought I had to go to one of these Caribbean countries or Middle East or African countries to get this.
Come to Florida, and I'll give you some wild grapes. Come down here.
I don't think right now I would want to go to Florida with your governor. I have a problem with that, Governor DeSantis, just like I have a problem with Governor Abbott in Texas. I have a problem. The one person that people talk about, which I think he's an awesome governor, and that is Governor Newsom in California. But as far as Governor DeSantis and as far as Governor Abbott, I have no use for them. They are provokers. They're the ones that caused they went and brought immigrants over with a promise for jobs. This is how ignorant, how evil those people are. They brought these people under the guise of good jobs and housing, and then they get here and they ship them to New York and to Massachusetts and other states up north to prove some kind of sick point. That's why we need changes in this country. We need.
Well, I'm gonna tell you something, Mr. President. I think you involved in the church seven. You should be familiar with this book. It's called the Book of Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the Book of Daniel, at the conclusion of the Book of Daniel, the angel told him to say, close the book, shut up the book, seal the book, until the end and in the days Gentiles come to an end, then the books will be open. What you are experiencing right now, and what we're going through right now, based on everything that you see, is now. The ancient books are open. They are open now. And the information that's coming out now is phenomenal. And it's been there all the time. It's just that it was not time for it to be revealed on an international global level. And this is why all of the upheavals and what you're seeing about the government and all this stuff, because the books are now open. They were sealed, but now they are open because it is time.
Can I mention, you mentioned the book of Daniel. I want to let people know, and I've been telling everybody this. You know how they use days and evenings for years, symbolic of years? In the book of Daniel, chapter 8, verses 13 and 14, it talks about 2,300 years. We are in the year 2023. We know from the book of Matthew that it says, unless the days be shortened, none of his elect will be saved. So this year, 2,300, 2,023, and we're going up with, even with the crucifixion of the Christ Jesus, it's almost two and a half thousand years. So I want everybody to realize that this year is going to be, there's going to be miracles, but there's also going to be destruction. And we see all these nations coming together with this whole thing with Russia and Ukraine. We see a government that's provoking China and provoking North Korea and provoking Iran and Iraq and all these surrounding countries with Russia. And we see Israel starting problems with the people in their country. So I just want to say this. This is a time when we better be looking at change, and we better do it quickly, because something is going to be happening very soon. Everybody can look in the book of Peter, 2 Peter chapter 3, and it will say how a lot of people don't think it's going to happen because it hasn't happened in all these years. But it reminds us of the flood. When God told Noah after the flood, the next time of destruction would be by fire. We need to look at these fires in Hawaii and Canada. We need to look at the earthquakes, and we need to look at these tornadoes and these hurricanes. We have to look at the hottest it's ever been in this earth, the global warming, and we have to look at the nuclear weapons right now that's a threat to the world. So everybody wake up. And if you don't think that, I'm sorry to say it, but if you don't think that this current candidate is going to be able to meet up with your expectations, I guarantee that you would be choosing somebody that would definitely meet up to all expectations, because he is for the people. So just keep that in mind, everyone. The book of Daniel, as our brother was saying, is truly, truly giving answers to what's going to be coming about and what's going to happen when those seals are open. And it looks like they're opening them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the seals are opening. And one other thing, I would like to take your little nerves down a little bit. Don't forget that we are spiritual beings, having a human experience, and there is nothing new under the sun. So we are, you don't have to be like Chicken Little running out there talking about the sky's falling. Go ahead and get you some seeds, go ahead and start gardening, and grow you some peaches and some collard greens. Keep on going, keep fighting the good fight. And it doesn't matter how good you are. You can heal the sick and raise the dead, and you still gonna have somebody that don't like you. So we ain't got time to wait about trying to do this, that, and the other. Just do the best you can for as many people as you can for as long as you can. And then when it's time to give up the ghost, go ahead and give it up. And then you can make the decision, say, well, look, I'm going back for round two. And come on back and keep on doing it.
You know, letting people know about these times too. I want to bring up one last thing I forgot to mention. They said there's been over 500 sightings of UFOs since January of this year, and I wanted to let people know too. If you go to the Book of Ezekiel, chapter 1, it's going to be talking about UFOs. This is in the Bible too. So all of these are signs of the times. It's time for a change. It's time that we all come together and as a people, and,
okay,
and stop.
You're absolutely correct, Mr. President. I have to inform you that UFOs does exist, and you know how I know? The way I know is because I seen them, and on a separate date, a female friend of mine, she's seen them too. So they are real. They do exist. And there was a time when there was no Atlantic Ocean. I'm down here in Jacksonville. We're right down there off the coast of Florida, 40 miles off the coast of Florida in the Atlantic Ocean. We got a 400-foot-high pyramid. It couldn't have been an Atlantic Ocean because in order to build a pyramid, you had to have dry land. Now, you have the earthquake, the great earthquake, and then you had Atlantis. So what I would like to recommend is a book by a gentleman called Billy Carson. He wrote a book called The Compendium of the Emerald Tablet. If you don't get that, then you can Google the Emerald Tablet and read the stuff, and it will tell you a lot of stuff that will help you understand while the seals and the books are being opened today. It will be more enlightening to you. The Emerald Tablet of Soul.
And I want to say, Mr. Williams, last time I kept you over the hour, and you had another appointment to go to, so I'm over, almost 10 minutes over now, so I'm going to let you go so you can attend to your other priorities. And I thank you once again for being on, and I look forward to you being on next week, same time, at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Takara, I want to thank you for coming on as well, because you have been very informative, not only this evening, but also the other day when I interviewed Reginald Clemens. So I want to thank you for coming on as well. Audience,
you're
again,
welcome.
Andy Williams Jr., presidential campaign runner for We the People, will be on next Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Mr. Williams, I want to thank you so much for joining us again, and I look forward to hearing more about your role, upcoming role as the President of the United States. And thank you so much for giving us this honor. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And Miss Leona, if you could send me Takara's number.
Right.
I'm going to
send it through Messenger now in a few minutes so that
okay.
You can connect with him. If either of you have any last minute thoughts or sayings that you want to say to the audience, please feel free to do so.
Go ahead, Mr. President. I'm done.
In 2 Chronicles 7:14, it talks about if my people who are called by my name would turn from their wicked ways. What that lets the people know that they have the power to make the change. In the Declaration of Independence, which is the preamble to the Constitution, it says, we the people. That position says, we the people have the power to be the change. In both incidents, the common word is people. That's who we are. We are people. Takara, you know we're not persons. That's another story. But we the people have the power. Never ask somebody to do for you what you should do for yourself. If you don't like the way things are going in your community, if you don't like the way things are going in your state, if you don't like the way things are going in Congress, then what you could do is step up, show up, and be the change that you want to see. We Are the People Party. We'll be coming out, but before this month is out, you'll be able to register, become a member. We will walk with you as one of the family. We will teach, guide, as well as learn. We are the people, and we have the power.
Thank you so much, Mr. Williams. Andy, I was going to say real quickly, too, where I grew up on Cape Cod, we were 6 miles from the Kennedy compound, and Ted Kennedy and the nieces and nephews from Florida and elsewhere used to come to this club we had at the end of our street. I guess they found that this is where they could let their hair down and then go back to their Hyannisport and all other places where they lived. But I will say John F. Kennedy was a good president. One of my best friends was from Little Rock, Arkansas, when he brought over the Freedom Riders. So we have another one that's running for president. Everyone, like I say, think about it. Listen to what he has to say. Listen to what we as a people have to offer. And I thank you once again for being on with us, both Andy Williams Jr. and also Takara. And I will get that number to you as well.
Thank you so much.
Thank you both.
Okay. All right.
Audience, have a good evening, and we are now ending this episode. Thank you for listening in.